The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. I think we might have a couple of technical difficulties. It looks like we're still going out. Sorry for the issue on the playing the news twice. Again, a little bit of technical difficulties there. So, lots to talk about in the news. I mean, so much so that we played it twice. That's not because there's not much to talk about. On today, I want to focus on some economic news. There's been just some very remarkable developments, both kind of long-term and then just even over the weekend, with the Bank of England Governor Mark Carney suggesting a new global reserve currency to topple the dollar's dominance. So that is going to be coming up shortly. I just wanted to draw attention to one story from our website, just as we near the end of the month and start coming up into September. This is from Josue Michels. Germany's government may see its final blow this autumn. It's actually a story that will tie in, as we see towards the end, with the economic news that we'll be talking about. But we could be facing some turbulent times for Germany's political system just coming up over the next few weeks. Germany's Bild newspaper wrote, "Dark clouds are hovering over politics and economics." They wrote that a horror autumn is threatening. They wrote that it's getting scary. Elections in the East, political earthquakes in Italy, plus Brexit, and US President Donald Trump's trade dispute with China could shake up Germany. Now, as Joshua points out, you know, the Bild is a tabloid paper, but these are still pretty remarkable headlines here. There are state elections coming up in eastern Germany. This is the big thing that a lot of eyes are on for this upcoming vote. You've got three states in having elections in September: Saxony, Brandenburg, and Thuringia. And polls are painting it pretty bad for basically all of the mainstream parties, for the Christian Democratic Union Party over there and for the Social Democrats. They're forecasting possibly even double-digit losses. And you've even got some polls indicating that the anti-migrant alternative for Deutschland could come first, could end up being the most popular party. And this could have a major impact all around the world. And for all of Europe, where you've got the potential for even Germany's coalition could unravel over some bad elections. Then you've also got Italy coming up, and I think we'll know shortly whether they're going to have fresh elections as well. But watch those elections coming up in the autumn. There's a lot of polls that look bad for Germany's mainstream leadership. They show that something big is coming for Germany's politics. There's a lot of people that are not happy with Germany's politics, Germany's political system. Well, the main thing, though, that I want to talk about, though that's important to watch as we get close to September, as we get close to some of those votes, is the world of funny money that we're now moving into. Last week in Germany, people paid for the privilege of lending money to the German government. So, you know, normally you borrow money and you promise to pay it back in the future with a little bit extra, you know, with interest. You're going to pay more than you borrowed. And then that way, people who lend to you, they feel incentivized to do that. Well, in Germany, instead, the German government just said, well, we want to borrow some money and we're going to pay you back a little bit less than what you initially lent us. And then investors were happy to go along with that. They had no trouble finding investors doing that. And that's something that, well, this has happened before on short-term loans, but this was a 30-year loan. And it's the first time this has happened for any kind, for a government itself issuing long-term debt. I mean, people will trade money on the secondary market. You know, people who've already lent money to the government, they'll then sometimes pay that off to somebody else and make a loss on it. But this kind of thing where a government is lending money and other people are paying for the privilege to borrow the money in long-term bonds is unprecedented. And it's not just banks. In Denmark, this hit the news over the last couple of weeks, there's a bank there that will pay you to take out a mortgage. So you borrow the money to go buy a house, and then you pay the bank back less than what you borrowed. It's Denmark's third largest bank, Jyske Bank. I should have looked up how to say that. So they're offering a 10-year mortgage with minus 0.5%. There's another Danish bank, Nordea. It's offering a 20-year mortgage at 0% interest. So no interest. You just pay back the same as you borrowed after 20 years. The housing economist from this bank, the Jyske Bank, they explained, we don't give you money directly into your hands, but every month your debt is reduced by more than the amount that you pay. The bank has a big FAQ section because this is so unusual. So many people have all kinds of questions about what on earth is going on here. They answer questions like, well, how is that possible? Yes, you did read that correctly. So a very unusual situation. And something that can easily sound pretty great. Unless you have a lot of cash sitting in the bank. Now, if you do, you probably noticed, even now, not necessarily in one of these countries that's getting closer and closer to negative interest, but even in the UK and the US, I'm sure if you have a savings account, you'll notice you don't get much interest on it these days. But now people are talking about negative interest rates on savings accounts, where again, you pay the bank for them looking after your money. In Switzerland, the bank UBS, it told, this is more for wealthy clients, but if you deposited more than €500,000, there would be a charge of 0.6% each year. So instead of paying interest, they're charged for it. And you've got interest rates on saving deposits, again, in that same Jyske Bank, having fallen to zero. And they're thinking of, again, adding in fees. You've got in Germany now, you've got banks increasingly paying on checking accounts, on the kind of everyday accounts, charging people fees for them, something which until recently was very unusual, was unheard of in Europe. And behind this all is, behind the scenes, there's been an explosion in negative interest lending, where you have where you get paid to borrow money and you have to pay to save. It's only now, I think, becoming more and more obvious to consumers. Only now are you starting to get to the point where you're having negative interest mortgages and negative interest savings accounts. But in the finance world, this has been going on for several years, and it's reached a pretty high level. Yahoo Finance talks about how common this has become in a whole load of different areas. Here's a clip from one of their shows on the subject.
A great article, very in-depth on the Yahoo Finance site looking at this. But you spoke to Mohammed El-Aryan, and he said negative yields could break things. What did he mean by that?
Well, it's because it's so unknown, Brian, and it's a parallel universe. I mean, if you think about it, basically, you know, as a lender, you're getting back less than you've lent. And as a borrower, you're just, you know, being able to benefit tremendously from this. It hasn't really hit consumers yet, but I think that it will at some point.
What do you think the consumer...
So you're getting to this point where you've got trillions of dollars being traded in negative interest. You know, all around the world, you're seeing this become a thing. The central bank in Japan, the European Central Bank, for when banks want to park their money somewhere where they've got a lot of money and they want to put it in a savings account when they're not loaning it out again, for certain types of doing that, if they're going to lend that money to the Europe or put that money in the European Central Bank, the ECB will charge them interest. They'll have to pay for the privilege. So you'll see, and then Denmark has their actual bank rate is now negative. So the interest rate that the bank sets, basically their way of steering the whole economy, the rate that they loan money to other banks is negative. So again, if you're a bank in Denmark and you want to borrow money from the central bank, you get paid for that. And if you want to save money in the central bank, you have to pay for the privilege. And they're talking about this as a possibility in the United States as well. They talked about this on Yahoo Finance the other day. Here's a clip about that.
And the real thing is, to my mind, it has all the hallmarks of potential for real trouble in the financial markets because it's unprecedented. It came out of nowhere. People are dismissing it. They think it's never going to happen here in the United States. And I think there's a real possibility, like Mohammed El-Aryan said, it could really break things if it happened here.
What's the big chances that it could happen here in the U.S.? It seems to be that's where we're going.
Yeah, I think there's a real chance. And, you know, the same people who were saying, you know, Donald Trump would never be president, mm-hmm. Boris Johnson will never be prime minister, are the people who are now saying we'll never have negative rates here. And again, you know, so far the financial system's holding up just fine with these negative rates. But what does it really mean when you're paid back less? Yeah. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't want to do it. So that means you start chasing yield. You start chasing risky investments. What are the implications there? It's a distortion. And I think it's something policymakers haven't really wrapped their brains around.
Does that make
sense? So it's a weird situation, but the same coming soon to the United States, quite possibly. And as they talked about there, it's not something we're used to. It's not something that even we really understand the risks very well, because we've just never been in this position before. There's thousands of years of economic history, there's tons and tons of economic thinkers, but nobody's really kind of tried to grapple with this this problem of negative interest rate. It's just not been something that's done before. Bloomberg Finance, they talked about this a couple of months ago. And again, they underlined this same thing, that this was a talk with David Folkerts-Landau, the head of research and group chief economist at Deutsche Bank. And he talked a bit about negative interest rates and just, you know, what a strange situation that we are in.
David Folkerts-Landau, once again, negative interest rates. What are the ramifications of this new bout of negative interest rates to market participants?
Good morning, Tom. Yeah, having 10 trillion of debt trading at negative rates is, we always forget it, but it's a historical anomaly. We have in 2,000 years of history not seen anything like it, even though we tend to get used to it on a day-to-day basis. It is very bad news for Europe in the sense that negative rates hurt the banking sector, the intermediation process. They project an aura of fear of something that we really don't know where to go from here on if things don't get better. So if you are a mid-sized German company looking to make your capital investments, you say to yourself, negative right. interest rates, that looks very dangerous to me. And I'm not sure that the people in charge of making economic policy really kind of know what they're doing. So negative interest rates from that point of view have a very scary connotation.
So not something we have any experience of in 2,000 years of banking, something that's just never happened before. He talked about how that kind of lends it a scary connotation as people just don't know what to expect or what's really going on here. And even Warren Buffett, one of the richest men in the world with his Berkshire Hathaway, his big fund there, you know, he doesn't know how this ends. He was talking about this again. This is a couple of years ago on CNBC, where you were seeing this more and more kind of in the business, you know, within the financial world. The financial community hadn't really quite started spilling out into the, I don't know, the quote unquote real world yet. But here's what he had to say about, you know, this rise in negative interest rates and what we're seeing here.
What's happened with interest rates is really extraordinary. I mean, you could go back and read everything Keynes wrote and everything Adam Smith wrote or Ricardo wrote or Galbraith wrote or you name it. And Paul Samuelson, I mean, you won't see a word, in my view, anything I've ever seen, about sustained negative interest rates. I mean, we are doing something the world hasn't seen. It does have the effect of making all assets more valuable. I mean, interest rates are like gravity in valuations. I mean, if interest rates are nothing, you know, values can be almost infinite. If interest rates are extremely high, that's a huge gravitational pull on values. And we had that in the early 1980s. So we have gone into this period. Well, Berkshire Hathaway is sitting with billions of dollars of euros in an insurance company that we have in Europe, and they will bear a negative rate. I mean, we would be better off if we had a big mattress in Europe that we could stick all this stuff in. And if I could just find the person who I trusted to sleep on the mattress, you know, that's what we would do. If we have a billion of euros at minus 35 basis points, that's, you know, three, not a billion, it would be three and a half million euros a year that it's costing us just to have that. Well, that means you don't want to collect your receivables. I mean, why would you want to collect your receivables? It goes into a negative, you know, it distorts everything. Now, there's a good reason why they're doing it, but nobody has really gone through an extended period like this. We do not know how this movie plays out.
That's quite the admission. You know, we do not know how this movie plays out. We're getting involved now in an absolutely unprecedented financial experiment. And you can, like he said, you can understand kind of why some of this is happening. You know, typically, the way banks respond to economic crises is to cut interest rates. The idea being, okay, the economy is doing badly. Our whole economies are all based on debt and on spending. So how do you get people to spend more? Well, if you cut interest rates, saving isn't as profitable. Loans are cheaper and easier. So do that. Businesses, individuals, the idea is, well, then they'll all start doing more with their money. They'll start borrowing money. They'll start spending money. Businesses will take out loans and expand and this kind of thing. But you had the 2008 financial crisis hit. Interest rates were lowered, but the economy never really got healthy enough for those interest rates to go back up again. Now, typically, in a recession, banks tend to lower interest rates by about 5%, very roughly. Now you're in a position where interest rates in the US, for example, are about 2-3%. In the rest of the world, they're even lower, and then people are starting to get worried about another recession now. So what do you do if interest rates are at 2%? You can't cut interest rates by 5%. Well, you can, but then you get into this weird negative interest rate territory, and that's where we are now. That's why we're in this position. But we've reached this case where we've been going through all of these different financial crises after financial crises, and we've kind of convinced ourselves that these different crises are just part of the normal business cycle. When at the same time, with each crisis, we have to introduce stranger and stranger things to deal with the problem. One of our previous economic commentators, Mr. Robert Morley, he had an article, I think back in 2005, called America's Alice in Wonderland Economy. And he was talking about some of the weird things that the US did in response to the 2008 financial crisis. And also negative interest rates were kind of just starting to take off around that time. But he talked about quantitative easing and the way that with the 2008 crisis, they had to resort to quantitative easing. He wrote that after the crisis, something extraordinary happened. Central banks did something they promised they would never do because it was potentially so destructive to confidence in their currencies that the whole system might implode. They said they would create unlimited amounts of money by fiat to bail out the financial system. They pumped trillions into the market to keep the debt bubble inflated. 7 years later, they haven't stopped. First, it was the Federal Reserve expanding its balance sheets from a couple of hundred billion to almost 4.5 trillion. This is 4.5 trillion created from nothing to buy things like mortgages and US government bonds. For a time, around 95% of all mortgages in America were provided by the Fed's funny money. And then it talked about how Europe, Japan went on to do the same money creating. And Japan, the Bank of Japan has done this just a huge amount. At one point, it became the biggest shareholder in the country. I'm not sure if it still holds that interesting distinction. And it's the biggest bondholder. It became the biggest bondholder in Japan as well. And they're creating money out of nothing to buy real things. And Mr. Morley wrote, the world accepts it like it is nothing out of the ordinary. And so, you know, we had that, and now we're 10 years on from the financial crisis, and we're worried about another financial crisis where we're having to pull something new out of the hat. And so now we're seeing more and more resorting to negative interest rates. And think about what this does. You know, I'm thinking, well, I could put my money in a bank account and lose money while it sits there, or I could take it out and do something with it. Well, I'm going to lose money anyway. I might as well put it in the stock exchange where I could make some money. Which, I mean, there's nothing wrong in and of itself of investing in the stock exchange. But if you start creating this atmosphere of, well, I just want to put my money anywhere, then that creates bubbles. People are desperate for anything that makes money. They put it in things that are risky. Now, you could say, you could kind of come at this from a Christian perspective and say, well, the Bible says don't charge interests. So in this world of very low interest or negative interest, aren't we becoming more like the Bible? I mean, yeah, if America did follow the Bible for its financial system, that would be a great thing and solve a whole lot of problems. But you know, the Bible, the whole economic system, isn't based on debt. God gave Israel laws and he gave laws regulating interest. But the idea was that these people, these laws were there to help people that got into trouble, and there was a safety valve in terms of more like charity. They could borrow money and there were laws around that, and it wasn't something intended to be common, certainly not something intended to be an integral part of the system the way it is in today's world. You read what it describes, and it's, yeah, poor people or people getting into trouble. It's not people looking for a business opportunity or looking for cash to invest on the stock exchange being able to borrow money at no interest. The way it is now, we've completely rejected the Bible's advice on, or law, really. I mean, it's not just advice. God details laws of cause and effect that, whether we ignore them like the law of gravity or not, they're still there. But we've completely rejected that. And so we've got this whole system built on debt, and now you've got zero or almost negative interest where basically you're just sending people just this massive neon sign message, borrow money, do not save. You know, go into debt, don't save, we'll punish you for it. That's the message coming from central banks around the world. So it's not just people, say, just putting all their savings in the stock exchange. You're getting, well, negative interest. Well, if I borrow $100, I only have to pay back $99 in a year, say. So I make money if I borrow money and stuff it in a mattress, or at least I'm better off than I would be putting it in the bank. Well, what if I borrow money? I invest it in the stock exchange. Well, then, not only do I have to pay back less than I borrowed, well, I could make money on the stock market. Borrow $100, put it in the stock market, pay back $99 at the end of the year. And this is then where you really start driving bubbles and you start driving prices sky high. And it gets quite dangerous when you get lots and lots of people borrowing money in order to invest, because eventually you start to have investments go bad. Banks want their money back all of a sudden, which means that people have to sell, they're just forced to sell shares where they are at the moment instead of waiting for them to become profitable, which can just lead to a massive banking collapse very easily. But it's just the message. Think of the message that it sends. Go into debt, don't save, we'll punish you for it. You know, you're not sure you can afford that mortgage? Well, take it out, because we're going to help you pay it off. Negative interest rate, you have to pay back less. And already the low interest rates era that we're living in is affecting government spending in the US. You know, people are saying, well, the US should borrow money. Interest rates are at an all-time low. So we don't have to pay much interest, so America should borrow more. And there's even people on the right in the Conservative Party or the Republican Party that have, well, they've been all in favor of borrowing more money. And then you have people on the left saying, you know, all these massive projects, free healthcare for all. Well, we can finance that by borrowing, because we've got low interest rates. Well, imagine what it would be like if America becomes in the same situation as Germany, say, where people are paid to lend money to the government. There would be a very tempting argument there to just get into even more debt. People are paying to lend us the money, so let's go into debt. Let's borrow more. You know, you can't say, oh, we can't afford that. You can't say, oh, we can't afford free healthcare because people will pay us to borrow the money. Let's just keep borrowing and borrowing. You could really see politicians getting behind that, and you could really see them basically duping a whole lot of people into supporting that kind of rhetoric. And what this overlooks is that it still increases the amount of debt that America holds. You know, America's got a what really is a record peacetime debt. I mean, you look at the last time America's debt was this large compared to its economy, and you're going back to the late 1940s, where America is paying off its massive debt from World War II. You know, now there's no massive debt to pay off from World War II. So you're in a really, you can see how people would really be tempted by that. But you just build up this debt and maybe fine. If we've got negative interest right now, that massive debt might be affordable. But you know, sooner or later, that's always got to be paid back. You can't just keep building up debt forever. But you know, if we get negative interest rates in the United States, you could really see that becoming a very common argument. And this is also where the economist F.A. Hayek's views on interest are very interesting. He talked about the way that government interference in the interest rates usually led to malinvestments, you know, to people making bad investments, borrowing money, putting it in areas that just aren't profitable. You know, so that without government interference, there's a kind of a natural discipline in what people borrow, what they invest in. If you artificially lower those interest rates, people invest in things they wouldn't invest in otherwise that are less profitable. So low interest rates cause a buildup of low quality investments in society, in an economy, which then leads to a recession. Well, think about what negative interest rates do. You're just shoving all kinds of money towards anything. You're going to get an explosion in bad investments. Now, this is an important story to watch for a whole lot of reasons. But in all these crazy contortions that we're seeing the death blow of the US dollar. And this is something Herbert W. Armstrong forecast decades ago and said would play a really important role in world events. Mr. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry, he gave a whole Key of David program kind of going into what Mr. Armstrong said about that. So here's how he summarized these economic forecasts that Mr. Armstrong made back in the 1980s.
But Otto von Habsburg was telling you there that he was one of those men trying to unite Europe into a strong union, but he simply couldn't do it. He simply could not do it. And Mr. Armstrong at that time told him that, look, he said, I think this union is not going to come except there comes a crisis first, a real serious crisis. And he said, I think that crisis is going to be a financial crisis. Now, Otto von Habsburg said that he agreed with Herbert W. Armstrong. He agreed with him and believed what he said. And today, I'm telling you, over 30 years later, I'm going to show you how spectacularly that prophecy is being fulfilled, that personal prophecy of Mr. Armstrong's. But why would he make a statement like that? Well, because he knows that and talked about the banks all being tied together in the Western world. And the United States is the leader, has been. It's losing that leadership very rapidly, but it has been in the past the leader of that financial tie that all these nations have. But Mr. Armstrong saw this crisis looming in 1984, which was a long time ago, the very crisis that really part of it that we experienced in 2008, and I'll tell you, we're getting a strong warning today that there's going to be another one like that, another meltdown financially, if we don't wake up and make some radical changes. But who's listening to what few warnings there are?
So there'd be a financial crisis in Europe, or in America, and that would lead to Europe unifying. And we already saw in the aftermath of the 2008 crisis how that can happen. How you had a financial crisis hit in America and it really pushed Germany to the front of Europe, or helped them really cement their position there, where they took the lead in providing all of these bailouts to these other European countries. But the condition for that was they had to accept Germany's terms, Germany's conditions. So it made a big difference in Germany's role in Europe. You have Germany playing a huge role in Cyprus, in Greece. You've got nations like Spain and Italy. They didn't necessarily receive the same full bailout treatment, but they know that their economies are shaky, and if they need any help in the future, well, then it's Germany that they've got to turn to. And so we saw that in 2008, and we've seen, like I said, just these desperate measures to try and stave off a continuation of the financial crisis. But now, you know, you're really reaching the end of the road when you're into negative interest rates and just incentivizing this massive explosion in debt. And all around the world, I mean, you see this explosion in debt taking place in Europe as well, but it's all a global system underpinned by the US dollar. A whole system that's centered on the United States. And more people are now becoming unhappy with that as a result of some of these policies and others. Europe has not forgotten or forgiven that the 2008 crisis started in the United States. Now, a lot of Europe's problems were caused because of problems of the euro, but still, they're blaming the United States and the financial crisis that happened there. And so this whole thing is causing people to lose trust in the US-based system. And that, yeah, once you see the inevitable financial crisis hit, when you have such an addiction to debt, well, that's just going to really kick into overdrive. People will be clamoring out for anything different. But already, people are talking about building a different financial system, building a new financial system. Just this weekend, you had central bankers meeting at Jackson Hole in Wyoming. And the Bank of England head, Mark Carney, he had some really remarkable words. I liked how CNBC announced it. So here's their introduction on this.
Very much, Mark Carney. Hope Sarah's sitting down, because he is calling for the creation of a new virtual currency that could ease the reliance of the world on the U.S. dollar, which he says creates some of the problems that we have today. I can explain more of that in a second. He also says the UK outlook, hinges critically on Brexit. Sarah, he is pointing out that, for example, half of all international trade is priced in dollars, but the U.S. that's five times greater than the U.S. contribution to world output, along with two-thirds of world securities priced in dollars. And he says the problem there is that U.S. interest rate policy, U.S. exchange rate policy, becomes exported to other parts of the world, and he says that is not the optimal way to run things. He acknowledges a long way off, but it's a pretty radical
Where did that come from, Steve? Is he trying to get kicked out of Jackson Hole?
He's just trying to get himself kicked out. Where did this come from? I guess it's not common to have some financial blogger sitting at home typing in his computer somewhere to make those kind of statements. But for the head of the Bank of England, this is one of the most respected and internationally high-profile positions in the world of economic policy, of monetary policy, coming out and saying, well, we need to end our dominance on the dollar. We need a new global currency, and I think we could use some kind of cryptocurrency, something like Bitcoin, which is what this Libra currency that he drew attention to is. To have him come out and say that is really remarkable. So basically one of the headlines was Carney proposes Libra-like reserve currency to end dominance of dollar. I think that was the title CNBC used. So this from the UK, you know, in theory a US ally. This isn't even from China or from Europe that's got rival currencies, saying, well, we need a new cryptocurrency to end the dominance of the dollar. And so he basically, as you heard in that clip there, his argument is that, well, the US economy, the US manufacturing, it no longer dominates the global finance enough for it to be worth America dominating the world's reserve currency. You know, China's rising, Europe's rising. These countries all have significant chunks of trade, of manufacture, of investment. And so because the US as an economy is no longer as dominant as it once was, the dollar can't be dominant the way that it once was. And if it is dominant like this, it's going to cause us all kinds of problems. And that is a pretty strong argument. And so I think that's why this argument is not going to go away. And he talks about why this idea might seem distant at present. Technological developments provide the potential for such a world to emerge. And then he talks about some of these different cryptocurrencies. He wrote, the most high profile of these has been Libra, a new payments infrastructure based on the international stablecoin, fully backed by reserve assets in a basket of currencies, including the US dollar, euro, and sterling. It could be exchanged between users on messaging platforms and with participating retailers. And he talked about how doing something like this, having some kind of international publicly controlled Libra, could dampen the domineering influence of the US dollar on global trade. So even the Bank of England is saying we need to dampen America's domineering influence. And he said, well, let's build a system worthy of the diverse, multipolar global economy that is emerging. So the head of the Bank of England saying we need a new economic system. We need a new financial system. We need to build a new system that's much less dependent on the dollar. And this is hugely important because of some of the prophecies made in your Bible about this coming financial system. And this really matches closely what he's talking about to some of the things we've been talking about for years on the trumpet. We'll take a quick break and we'll get back. And when we get back, we'll talk about and analyze more this financial system of the future.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
In 1945, the detonation of the atomic bomb in Japan brought an end to World War II with overwhelming force. This new technology ended the worst war man had ever experienced, but with it came a new, dangerous age. The age of atomic and nuclear energy had arrived, accompanied by weaponry capable of destroying all life on Earth. Man's number one problem now became that of human survival. After signing the Japanese surrender, General MacArthur spoke to America and the world about peace, and with it he brought a grim warning. He said, "Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Military alliances, balances of powers, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we will not devise some greater and equitable system, our Armageddon will be at our door." Referring to the last days of this present age, Jesus Christ said in Matthew chapter 24 and verse 22, "And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved." The threat of nuclear annihilation is knocking on the world's door while man continues his desperate search for peace without results. Your Bible promises a means of protection from soon coming war, but it also pictures a bright future in which war will finally be abolished, and in which a real, lasting peace will flourish. How can you find your way to the peaceful world to come and avoid the results of impending war? These questions need answers. Visit thetrumpet.com. Request your copy of our free booklet, We Have Had Our Last Chance.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And we've been talking about some financial news, the new world of funny money that we're in with negative interests, with the head of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, saying that that there should be a new global reserve currency based on fintech cryptocurrency, this kind of Bitcoin like currency controlled by all of these different countries around the world, rather than an American financial instrument or the American currency. And what I want to do now is just talk about how this ties directly in with Bible prophecy, and even with the story we talked about right at the start, with a change coming to German politics. Now, we played a quote from Mr. Flurry where he talked about this forecast Herbert W. Armstrong made in 1984. Mr. Armstrong described how a massive banking crisis in America, quote, could suddenly result in triggering European nations to unite as a new world power larger than either the Soviet Union or the U.S. And you know, he came to this conclusion based on a lifetime of studying Europe and discussing it with, like Mr. Flurry talked about, Otto von Habsburg, a very senior European politician. But this forecast really was based on Bible prophecy. The Bible tells us that the global financial system is on the brink of a revolution, is on the brink of a new system, the way Mark Carney talked about. Revelation chapter 17 and 18 describe a beast, a symbol of a great empire. And this beast has seven heads. It's symbols of seven successive resurrections. It talks about that, makes it clear that these heads come one after the other. It's a European empire an empire that is revived and then falls, and then another head comes along, and there's another revival after that. And the start of this chapter tells us that this beast is ridden by a woman, which in biblical prophecy symbolizes a church. So where in the world has there been a series of empires influenced by a major church? Well, Europe's the only real answer to that. And so Revelation 17 or 18 and 18 are describing a European power with a long history that's gone through six resurrections, six rises and falls already. And the seventh is now rising, a united European empire. And the Bible, when it talks about this, all the time it talks about it as a financial empire. There's so many prophecies that make clear that this is a major superpower or a major financial power. Revelation chapter 18, for example, describes merchants doing all kinds of trading. It talks about when this empire finally falls. In Revelation 18 and verse 11, it says, "The merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her." Verse 15 says that, "Well, the merchants of these things which were made rich by her." So it's a big financial center. That chapter talks about all kinds of trade that takes place throughout this European power. And then again, it mentions these merchants. You can go back and you can look at other passages in the Old Testament. And there's one that even talks about her merchants being like princes. You know, these European merchants, well, they're the big millionaires, the people with great power that kind of everyone looks up to. It's these merchants. Now, at the time the Bible was written, the great trading center of the world was Tyre. The Phoenician city of Tyre, the Phoenicians from Tyre, they traveled all around the world. They were famous as merchants. And so the Old Testament often uses the label Tyre to describe this soon coming power. Ezekiel 27 refers to this Tyre as being a merchant of the people for many isles and describes it doing business all around the world. Revelation 23 describes this Tyre joining a mart of nations with powers in the east, with China and Japan, or in biblical language, Kittim and Tarshish. And so there's so much detail. I mean, we could easily spend several programs, many programs, digging into all the details that the Bible says about this coming power. But it makes it very clear it's going to be a trading power. And then verse 13, or Revelation chapter 13, shows us that the government of this power is going to have a lot of control over this economy. Revelation 13 and verse 17, for example, says that no one will be able to buy or sell without the approval of this regime. So it's a trading empire, but then there's a strong economy there, a strong government there as well. And these prophecies mean there are some huge changes ahead to the global financial system. Right now, you've got a system denoted on dollars, dominated not by Europe, but by the United States. And this is why Mr. Armstrong was saying, well, there's going to be some changes coming. And this is part of the reason why he said, well, you have a global financial crisis beginning in America. You'd need a revolutionary change to bring about this European-dominated global system that's talked about in the Bible. And then this crisis could also spark Europe to suddenly come together as a united power in the way that they haven't managed to do quite yet. And we already saw part of that in the 2008 crisis. And then there's even the possibility, you know, when you look at what the Bible says about this coming power, that it's possible that you could have financial technology that Mark Carney was talking about playing a role here. You could have some kind of electronic money, could easily give a government a whole lot of control over what goes on in a country. It could make it very easy for a government to say nobody can buy or sell unless they do what I say. In this case, it's submit to certain religious conditions. Now, I don't think it's necessarily the only way that could happen. But that's certainly one way that you could enforce that. You can't even use money. The government, if it's all electronic money, the government can cut that off. But even without that, just this idea of a new global power is coming that's going to work closely with Russia and China and Japan, at least initially. And the United States is going, they're going down big time economically and in other ways. That makes Mark Carney's suggestion about having a new global currency really, really interesting. And there's another aspect to this that I think is just fascinating. Now, the Bible tells us that this coming European power is going to be led by one man, a strong man. Daniel 8, verse 23 to 24 describes him as a king of fierce countenance. It says that he understands dark sentences. And part of this chapter is referring to history. But verse 25 says that this king will be defeated after he stands up against the prince of princes, which shows us the time frame that this prophecy is mostly for. This is for the end time. And sure, some parts of it were fulfilled anciently, or there were types fulfilled anciently. But in the main, and there's other scriptures in Daniel that brings that out, these prophecies are for our time today. So you're going to have a strong man rising in Germany. So you have America's financial system collapsing, and this throws Europe and the globe into financial crisis. So you then have a strong man that helps unite Europe. And, well, it would be logical that this strong man that helps unite Europe would play a role in this economic revival as well. Would have a lot of knowledge and connections about global finance. Would be maybe play a role in bringing about something like what Mark Carney suggested. Some kind of cryptocurrency for taking dominance away from the dollar. Well, since 2009, the Trumpet has been saying that the strongman in this prophecy could very well be former German Defense Minister Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg. And we have a whole booklet on that, A Strong German Leader is Imminent, that you can write for to get more evidence of that. And I really would urge you to go and prove that to yourself if you haven't already, and understand deeply why we're watching that man. But he really was somebody who became very popular. He also had political connections to Edmund Stoiber. Edmund Stoiber was kind of zu Gutenberg's mentor. And then Stoiber was mentored by Franz Josef Strauss. He was at times known as the strongman of Europe, a very influential politician in Germany's Germany's post-war political system was getting started. And he was somebody that had a personal relationship with Herbert W. Armstrong. And he talked about how he thought, well, maybe Strauss could be the strongman of Europe. Now, Strauss died. He didn't end up becoming that prophesied strongman. But now you've got kind of somebody in his political lineage that could well play that role. And he's also got a lot of aristocratic connections. He's connected to the House of Habsburg. And again, we talked about how Otto von Habsburg had a relationship with Mr. Armstrong, and they talked together. So there's a whole number of reasons. This just gives you some of it of why we've been watching this individual. Now, he was forced to step down in 2011. There was a plagiarism scandal. Even so, since then he's been giving some speeches occasionally every now and again. He'll come out and campaign for his party. And when he's done that, he's proved hugely popular. And he's becoming an increasingly vocal commentator on German, even global politics. He's a very outspoken critic of US President Donald Trump. But he's also really heavily involved in financial technology and cryptocurrency. He founded Spitzberg Partners in 2013. And a big area of what they focus on is cryptocurrencies. That's one of their main areas of expertise. They've worked, for example, to the state of Delaware, on integrating new technology into the state's financial system. And they've been experimenting of ways to use this technology and how they interact with businesses. And potential for using blockchain as a means of owning and trading shares. He's also on the advisory board of Ripple, another cryptocurrency similar to Libra, similar to exactly the type of thing that Mark Carney is talking about as being the new reserve currency. One German trading website called Ripple, the Bitcoin of banks. And it does something very similar to what Libra coin and this Libra idea is meant to do, where it's a cryptocurrency but still has a relationship with actual bricks and mortar banks. And so he's right involved in that already. And you're seeing more and more countries get on board with these kind of things around the world. And different banks and different organizations playing with these different kind of technologies, to the point now even the head of the Bank of England is talking about this. But this has just been a real passionate project for Zu Gutenberg. Just even this year, for example, January 17th, he was at the annual crypto financial conference in Switzerland, and he was speaking there. And he talked about the need for governments to work with cryptocurrency. He basically said, you know, if you don't have governments involved and you kind of leave it to be a bit more, say, anarchist, you end up with the big tech companies coming in and being the main players. But he was saying, well, instead, we need governments to step in and they need to be more involved with this currency. And we're going to do this. So I think it's really interesting that you have, you know, Mark Carney talking about using exactly this technology to end America's financial dominance. We're seeing with things like negative interest rates, America's financial dominance reaching its last gasps, having its dying spasms. And then Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg, this man we've been watching for about 10 years, is a key player in exactly this area that Mr. Carney's pointing to and saying, well, this could be the new global reserve currency. So you're seeing all of these prophecies revealed to Mr. Armstrong being fulfilled. You're seeing all of these things that God revealed to Mr. Flurry, that Mr. Flurry drew attention to 10 years ago, 5 years ago, all coming to pass. Now, all of these, there's so much in the Bible that you can see prophecy being fulfilled already. And like I talked about, you read those scriptures and it all makes clear this is all leading to the return of Jesus Christ. So man's financial system is on its last legs. We're getting into crazy positions as we just try and keep this going for one more year, get one last gasp out of the system. But at the same time, you can see that happen and see prophecy being fulfilled and know that this is leading to Jesus Christ coming and bringing in a new era of prosperity for the whole world, something that everyone can benefit from. So there's a wonderful hope behind this. But as I said, please go read our book, A Strong German Leader is Imminent, to learn about where this revolution in finance is taking us and the wonderful hope behind that. Well, thank you for listening. Mr. Stephen Flurry, I believe, will be back tomorrow. Until then, you can email us at td@kpcg.fm or tune in on 101.3 on the FM dial or at kpcg.fm.